Hello everyone, and we should say Happy New Year. If you're new here, welcome to Boat Briefing. My name is Charlotte Hogarth-Jones, and here with me to navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is Katia Damborski, who is currently speaking to me from the sunny south of France. Katia, how are things?
Yeah, good, Charlotte. Very happy to be back in the hot seat and very happy to be coming to you from France. It's very sunny over here, really living up to its reputation of nice warm weather. And this weekend we actually had some boats out and about, which is always nice to see and makes me very excited for the summer. Most of the boats have kind of been winterized and now we're starting to see them kind of peek out, come out into the bay, which is great.
Emerging, always an exciting time. And what have you been up recently? Because I know that you mentioned you'd been on a trip with Ocean Co, or to see Ocean Co, I should say.
Yeah, I went to see them at their Monaco office, I think it was last week, and their office is brilliant. I hadn't been before. It's like in this really old Monegasque building with this huge marble lobby and lots of friendly faces there that I got to catch up with. And we had some really nice food, actually, which, as you probably know, is not always a norm. Like really nice fresh crepes, and you can have savory toppings, sweet toppings, and hot roast chestnuts. So it's very festive, actually.
Yeah.
But the real reason we were there was actually to hear about a new project, which is a collaboration between Ocean Co and Vrypak or Vrypak. But I'm under extremely strict instructions not to talk about it. But I'll give you a teaser if you promise not to tell anyone, Charlotte. Can I swear you to secrecy?
It would just be me and the billion listeners of the Boat Briefing podcast. We'll all keep your secret safe with us, Katia.
Okay. Thank you, Charlotte. Thank you, listeners. It's a new project. It's really big. I can't actually say how big, but it's pretty sizable. And it's been inspired by lily pads. And the design is actually like nothing I've really seen before. It's very different, very avant-garde and contemporary, but actually also really elegant and sophisticated as well, which, you know, is quite a hard balance to strike, you know, having something that looks a bit wacky, but is still really nice looking as well.
I mean, Vrypak and Ocean Co are two of my absolute favourite studios. So I can't imagine a collaboration between the two of them that wouldn't be absolutely amazing. So I'll be watching that one pretty closely.
Yeah, I mean, me too. We saw a scale model of it at the event and it looks a bit weird. And normally the first question I have with concepts is, you know, okay, this looks amazing, but can you actually build it? But Monix from Vrypak said that Lateral really put their heads together to come up with solutions for this project. Obviously Lateral being the naval architecture firm. And again, I can't say too much, otherwise I'll have Paris from Ocean Co on the phone telling me off. But yeah, this is definitely one of the most amazing concepts that I've seen in a really long time. And you'll be seeing it probably for the first time at the Dubai Boat Show, where they'll be unveiling it. So hopefully we'll get a nice new story out of it and you can see it in the flesh. But yeah, definitely one to watch.
Exciting. Well, keep us posted.
And speaking of design, I hear you're off to Kitzbühel quite soon.
Yeah, off to the mountains, our kind of annual pilgrimage to the slopes. I always love it. It's always a nice boost post-Christmas when you're in a bit of a slump to go and get some kind of mountain air, some dazzling mountain sunshine, and of course get to reconnect with everyone from the industry. You know, you have that weird gap post-boat show where everyone's busy in the run-up to Christmas. So always a great event. Some great speakers lined up as always. I'm particularly looking forward to seeing, there's this guy called Zolti, who looks very cool and beardy, and he does this amazing kind of kinetic art, including this one called The Pearl, which kind of responds to the tides, which I think is amazing. I love these more interactive pieces on board. I think they're such interesting talking points, and I think he'll have some really cool stuff to show. Apart from anything else, I think these things are amazing to look at. So yeah, really looking forward to seeing him.
Could you explain what exactly kinetic art is? You said it's like an interactive kind of...
Yeah, it's art that kind of moves or responds with the environment around it. So it kind of evolves, whether that's throughout the day or in response to things like tides or all sorts of things. I mean, I'm sure he's going to give much better examples and expand on it a lot more clearly. But I've seen various things over the years, you know, lighting companies have done lights that kind of flash when you cheers and things, but I think this is altogether a different ball game, and it's all quite sophisticated. So I'm interested in learning more in that.
Okay, cool. And is he the keynote speaker?
No, he's not. He's going to be, I'm sure, showing bits and pieces, but the keynote is another really interesting speaker He's a Swiss-born American designer, and he has this kind of mission to create products that are both commercially viable and contribute to social good, which we love, obviously. And he's worked with some really big brands that you would have heard of, like Jawbone, Kodak, L'Oreal, Prada, Puma, SodaStream. So kind of some really high-end big companies there. And now he's turning his attention to yachts. So he's got this ambitious new design project, which is kind of centered on sustainability. So he's going to unveil that, which is very exciting. And I think it'll be the first time most people have seen it. It's the first time I've seen it.
Oh, it's brilliant. I don't think you told us his name. Are you keeping us in the dark? Is it building us?
Sorry, I thought, I assume everybody knows he's called Yves Behar. Anyway, yeah, you can find more about him on the site. And I think tickets are still available, the very last few, I think. So yeah, if you've missed the boat, A, where have you been? But B, I think you can just about get a last minute ticket. It's really looking forward to it. It's going to be a great event, and lots of buzz already from people excited to hit the mountains.
And will you be hitting the slopes after all the design focused bits, or is that not your speed?
You know, last year the snow was beautiful and the weather was beautiful and everyone was telling me how amazing it was, and I thought, you know, because I can ski, I thought, meh, you know, this year is going to be my year. Then I canvassed a few people and the reports as to how difficult the skiing is ranges wildly. Lots of the people that say it's not that difficult, I suspect, are really excellent skiers. So I'm sitting on the fence for now. I'm fairly accident prone, so I don't know if I might be better off just drinking Glühwein somewhere and keeping my arms and legs intact. We'll have to see how we go.
But I mean, Charlotte, there's no life without a bit of adventure, right?
It's true. I should get out of my comfort zone. Anyway, I thought, in terms of just chatting this morning, I thought we could talk a bit about Maverick, because obviously the latest Flexplora 146 from Cantiere Delle Marche, it's in our February issue, which I know that will be kind of landing on people's doorsteps right now if they haven't already received theirs. But I wanted to ask you a few questions about it, just because I know you've been on board, you wrote the feature, I've been on board too, so I'd be interested to get your take on things and see if you thought the same as I did.
Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah, she's the cover boat, and you know, very in keeping with what you were just saying about adventure, Charlotte, because she is a true adventure hungry boat, right? She's off to take on the world.
Yeah, absolutely. So where did you visit the boat? Where did you go and see her? What was that? Was that at a show, or was that a special appointment to go?
I went to see her in Ancona, and it was kind of one of those appointments that were completely by accident, because I think I was there for something else. And then Cantiere Delle Marche was like, do you want to come on board? We've got this new Explorer. Do you just want to come and see it? And I was like, yeah, of course. So I wasn't really, you know, expecting all that much. But actually, when I got on board, it was very clearly a really highly customized and really impressively engineered and structured boat. So, you know, it's always quite nice to be taken aback, I guess, a little bit when you get on board a boat.
Yeah, I felt the same actually when I first saw it at Cannes, and there was all this hype around it, and you know, people were queuing to get on, and it was quite distinctive on the dock. It kind of jumped out at you, so I was quite intrigued. And then yeah, when you step on board, you have that moment of wow, this is really cool. It's kind of worth the hype around it. And I recall there were some really interesting design elements on board that made me think, okay, it's not just hype, there are some really cool interesting things going on here. For me, I mean, probably not the most interesting, but I loved they had this kind of open air bath, so you could have a bath out on deck. And you know, you can call me an exhibitionist if you want, but I love that idea of being, you know, when you're in the middle of the ocean, it's just you and the sea, and being able to kind of sit back in some bubbles and look at the sunset over the ocean, maybe with a few dolphins. That's kind of my dream. But how about you? Were there any of the kind of design elements that popped out for you?
Yeah, the bath was definitely one for me as well that, again, took me by surprise a little bit. And the person I was doing the tour with, I was kind of like, you know, what's going on here? What do you think about this? It's really kind of in your face as you walk in. So if you haven't been on the boat, it's kind of on the upper deck aft. So there's like a very public deck area. And then you walk in and the bath is right there, right next to a big glass window, as Charlotte says. So it's pretty exposed. But I mean, as you said, brilliant view. That was really cool. But I think for me, because when I went to see the boat, it wasn't really, it was finished, but a lot of the interior components were covered up. So I didn't really get a feel for just how custom it was. And obviously it's a very Top Gun influenced boat. So for me, what was kind of impressing me were things like the engineering and, you know, the crane that they've got on the back. That was absolutely awesome. I've never seen anything like that before, that kind of size and scale. And I came on board, it was up, and then we kind of did a little loop around the boat, and I came back and I was like, where's the crane gone? And she was like, yeah, it's, you know, it's concealed below the deck, but it's done so seamlessly and so quickly that you have the proper big crane out when you need it. And then when you want that space for socializing or, you know, storing other things, it really does just go away at the touch of a button. So that, I guess, is what really stuck with me about that boat.
I was really impressed in general, actually, at the kind of the ease that they can transform the different spaces on board. Like I went once in Cannes and twice in Monaco. And on all those separate occasions, you know, the boat looked pretty different. You know, they'd changed the deck spaces around, they'd done different things. On the last day I went, it was the owner's birthday and they were having some massive party in the evening. So in the morning it looked like a normal yacht, and an hour later it had, you know, tables laid out everywhere, disco ball, the crane was down. Like you say, it's an amazingly versatile yacht in terms of how quickly you can kind of make the spaces something else. It's weird seeing it at the boat shows and all the glamour of Monaco and that kind of thing, because like you say, it's an explorer, right? So it's meant to go to these places like the Arctic and Patagonia. Do you really think, you know, that's going to happen? Because I think the owner has plans for that to happen.
Yeah, I think she will, because what the owner told me when we spoke, I know you also spoke to Tom, the owner, is that he fell in love with the boat's engine room. Like, that's what really sold him on the boat. He really wanted to have a really capable, strong boat that could take him from A to B and withstand some of these really harsh environments. So he really paid a lot of attention to, as I said, the engineering and the kind of the heart of the boat, really. So yeah, I think she's more than capable. And, you know, Cantiere del Marche are, if I recall correctly, the number one builder of Explorer yachts, as we learned about in the recent Explorer Yacht Summit. So yeah, I think they will definitely deliver on that promise and make sure that the owner's got a real go anywhere boat. But you know, she's got an incredible itinerary. I think you know a little bit about this as well, don't you?
So yeah, I know they've got an amazing itinerary lined up. Not quite sure how much we can disclose of that, but he's doing some of Norway. He's got plans to do Norway, or they all have, over the summer. And then the Arctic and Spitsbergen, and then the Northwest Passage, which has always been a journey I really want to do. He had said to you, I think, I know it won't be a walk in the park.
Yeah, I mean, that's the understatement of the century, right? That's a real, probably one of the most ambitious voyages you can do. But that is really what he set out to do. The Northwest Passage was really on his bucket list. He's also got some kind of warmer climb destinations. I think was toying with the Seychelles and maybe some of the islands. I think I wouldn't say close to Africa, but I'm not 100% sure, so don't quote me. But I think that was initially part of his agenda. He's quite keen on seeing the flora and fauna. And, you know, you mentioned traveling with his son and having a tutor on board. And something he said to me was that he really wanted to bring his children along as a form of like homeschooling, or, you know, like educating them and opening up their eyes to different parts of the world. And he really believes in the education that you get from exploration, which is really interesting.
Yeah, well, great boat, great team behind it. So if you've got the magazine on your desk, now's the time to have a read. And yeah, amazing trip. And one of the things that struck me on board is, and I know it's mentioned in your feature, that the owner has a lot of like self-service elements in their cabin, so they can make themselves a coffee or they can put a load of laundry on without bothering crew. And it was a very informal, casual, relaxed kind of boat where you really felt at home. But that's not the case for every yacht, as we know. And also in this issue, we have a big piece, quite a tongue-in-cheek kind of witty piece by a writer called Daniel Pembrey, looking at, you know, etiquette on board and the modern rules for modern super yachts, which can be a bit of a minefield. And it covers everything from kind of taking your baseball cap off, which is something I had not thought of, but will be acutely aware of now, to, you know, how you should behave with your host, things you can ask, things you shouldn't ask. Like I said, it's quite satirical, really, with some very jolly cartoons. But it did bring up some things that I wasn't aware of that now I will be very careful of on board.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, can I ask you a couple of those kind of etiquette blunders or the kind of rules?
Okay. I mean, I obviously never make etiquette blunders, but you can ask in general.
Yeah. All right. So let's start with some basics then. What is the number one golden rule of superyacht etiquette that every guest should know before stepping on board?
For me, it's the captain is boss. You know, anyone that's been on a yacht with, you know, probably a much smaller yacht with different people trying to take control knows that that's a complete nightmare. You can only have one boss. And I think sometimes when you get big owners that are also big personalities, you know, people, you know, can be somewhat dismissive to the captain and the crew, which is obviously awful. But, you know, the captain's word is final. So if you're not on their good side, you're not going to get on well on your trip. So be polite to the captain and the crew, respect them, listen to them, and yeah, listen to the captain above everybody else.
And you mentioned in your article that being late is one of those things that can put you on the wrong side of the captain. So why do you think timekeeping is such a big deal on yachts?
It is a massive deal. And I think it's difficult because the informality of yachts, you know, you're kind of on holiday or you're on a fun personal trip and you kind of want to be relaxed, which obviously you can be, and every boat is different, but in general there are huge knock-on effects because of all the things that go on behind the scenes that you never know. You know, as an owner or a guest on a boat, you step on board, someone hands you a nice cool drink, lovely, or someone hands you a little hot appetizer, how nice, but you've got no idea of how many people behind the scenes are working to make that and tee it up ready for your arrival. So if you're half an hour late for your helicopter or your tender, and then half an hour late for something else, and you change your plans last minute, it actually puts the crew under a tremendous amount of strain because they're then trying to deliver what you sort of naturally expect without realizing, you know, so things will be going cold or getting hot, or crew who should really be prepping cabins and, you know, the dining room will have to, you know, be doing something else. It makes life very difficult for everyone. Obviously a few minutes isn't a deal breaker, but it is polite to try and stick to whatever schedule you've outlined, particularly in terms of transfers, and also the boat might just go without you. I've had that before. There was some confusion when we were in Antiparos and my tender just left, and you know, it can backfire hugely if you're not keeping an eye on the clock.
Oh wow, I thought that was only a cruise ship worry, but all right, good to know. What about no unexpected plus ones, whether that be people or pets? What's the story behind this one, and how do you think your owners react when someone shows up with a surprise guest?
Yeah, well, in the cartoon, we had someone showing up with a llama, which I think is probably not a situation many have found themselves in. But as any owner will know, you've got limited space for people on board. Very often people are keen to max out the opportunities they have. So they're at capacity on the boat. You know, if they've invited a few friends, they've invited enough people to fill all the cabins. So if you turn up with your two mates, whether that's to stay over or whether that's a party or whatever, if that then tips the yacht's capacity over, then they're going to have to ask either you or someone else to leave, which obviously is a pretty awkward situation. So it's definitely one of those situations where if you're invited, it's just you. If you want to bring someone else or you want to bring your dog or whatever, you've got to run that by someone.
Yeah, I mean, that's a safety issue then. So I can see that would be a tricky one. Kendall Roy told Cousin Greg in Succession, sails out, nails out. So how seriously do yacht hosts take grooming standards, and what do you think is the worst kind of pedicure faux pas that you've maybe seen or heard of?
He actually said sails out, nails out, bro. That's probably my worst Succession impression ever, but I love a bit of Cousin Greg, always makes me laugh. But I think that's something when you're new to the yachting industry, you don't really appreciate. You know, there's a lot of foot action. And the thing that always gets me is you see the inside of people's shoes. You know, if you're going on a boat in Monaco, you see these beautiful, you know, Laura Piana logos inside loafers.
Or my cheap Primark shoes.
Exactly. You can't be walking up in your disgusting, grubby Converse because everyone is going to see them. and it's just gross. And it's also not a time for complex shoes. You know, I realized, I think in my first Monaco Yacht Show, I wore some very dainty little court shoes with an ankle strap, which A, destroyed my feet. I was not prepared for the amount of miles and steps that goes on at these things. And so I was absolutely crippled by the end of it. But also you want something slip on, slip off. If you want to be that kind of nonchalant guest just heading onto a boat. Wrong socks, also not a time for your trainer socks. I noticed lots of the well-heeled gents at the boat shows this season were wearing very discreet kind of navy merino trainer liners, which were very kind of debonair. But yeah, you want to have, you want to get your pedicure, you want to have your feet in tip-top condition before you can step on board.
And was there something about no neon nail polish? Because I think that's a bit unfair, Charlotte, because I quite like a really nice...
Did you? I don't think it said that, but it's just, you know, I think that in general, superyacht crowd are quite classic, quite low-key. I think you don't want to be drawing attention to your feet unless you're confident that you're happy for them to be on show. Maybe that was the point.
Okay.
It doesn't actually mention neon nail varnish. I think that's something I inferred myself just now. But yeah, you've got to have great feet.
Okay, and finally, if you could give one piece of advice to a first-time superyacht guest, what would it be? And also, if you were going to break one etiquette rule, which one would you choose? I'm curious to hear both.
Oh, that's a toughie. Well, the advice for the guest is easy. I think you just have to pick up on the vibe of the boat and try your best to kind of fit in with it. So some owners, super chill, help yourself to a beer. Don't worry about what time you get up. You know, don't worry about being a bit late for the tender, whatever. Other owners obviously like to do a lot. They like to do excursions and diving and snorkeling, and they might have a social media person documenting it all. And I think to enjoy the trip and for the owners who invited you to want to invite you back, you've got to kind of get with the program, whatever that is, whether it's chilling out and not doing very much and you're someone who's normally kind of a workaholic, or getting involved in everything if they're real adrenaline junkies and that's what they like to do. But no one wants to have a kind of odd one out on board who's making other people feel uncomfortable, because then they'll be worrying if you're having a good time and it's not really for them to worry about because they're supposed to be having a good time. If I was going to break an etiquette rule, I vaguely remember there was one saying, no, you know, don't sit at the table in your bikini. You know, you should dress properly for lunch and for breakfast. I reckon if it was my boat or if it was my best friend, I would quite happily have a swim and then rock up for a croissant without thinking about the proper attire. And again, I think that's where the boat's vibe comes into play. If you're on a very formal boat, then that's probably not appropriate. But if it was my mate, I probably would do that.
Yeah, same for breakfast as well. I mean, you don't want to have to get dressed before you come up for breakfast. You kind of want to be able to rock up in your little dressing gown and monogram slippers with the name of the boat on it. So yeah, I think that's a good
break. Yeah, that's what I would do.
Okay, cool. Shall we talk about some headlines from the last week, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, a bit of a dramatic, if we kick off with this first one, a bit of a dramatic change of pace. This is the news that a marina fire has damaged 3 yachts in Marseille in France. The yachts have been badly damaged following a fire in Port de la Lave. The incident occurred on Thursday, so that will be the 9th of January, at approximately 5:30 local time. The fire broke out on board the 26.9-meter Leopard yacht Nasha 4 and spread to 2 other vessels, the 22.7-meter Aldebra, built by Osea Yachts, and an unidentified sub-24-meter boat. According to local reports, 2 of the yachts had their mooring lines snap, which caused them to drift and complicated the firefighting efforts. Authorities managed to successfully extinguish the blaze by 11:30 p.m. So it went on for a long time. If it started at 5:30, all sounds quite dramatic.
Yeah, quite sad as well. I think from what I heard, and again, don't quote me on this, but one boat was a write-off. The other two were kind of salvageable. But yeah, very sad. Over in the Netherlands, we heard that Dutch shipyard Heesen has announced the sale of Project Angelica, the latest addition to its 55-metre steel-class series. So the client is an experienced superyacht owner who has requested some modifications to tailor this model to his lifestyle. As of course, one of the nice things about Heesen is that you can make quite a lot of changes to suit the boat to your tastes. Delivery is scheduled for Q2 of 2027, and she will join sister ships such as Iris Blue, Mosquito, and Reliance on the water. Like her sister ships, Project Angelica will feature a fast displacement hull form developed by Van Oostenen and a rugged Omega Architects exterior, while Italian studio Luca Dini Design and Architecture has been selected for the interiors.
Good stuff. Well, we'll keep an eye out for that one. Lastly, there's the news that Dutch builder Bulk Shipyard has relaunched the 30.5-metre Ursus for an extensive 18-month conversion into a pocket explorer yacht. The vessel is now preparing for sea trials with delivery scheduled for this February. In 2022, Ursus arrived at Bulk's facilities in Urk in the Netherlands for her rebuild, which was completed in collaboration with Dutch studio Mulder Design. Plans included a new bow and stern, which has extended her LOA by 6 metres. She was previously a sub-24-metre boat, as well as a longer superstructure for greater volume in the main saloon, sun deck and beach club. So that sounds like quite a big transformation, I'd say.
It does, yeah. I mean, she looks really nice, having seen the first pictures. She's very modern looking. She's got this very interesting motif, which I think is of a bear, but I'm not sure, on the fashion plate. And, you know, we were talking about Maverick earlier and talking about how, you know, pocket explorers are becoming so popular and Cantiere Delamarque really nails that market. But this could be a real contender, I'd say. She's very nicely designed. And, you know, once we get on board and check her out, we'll be able to tell you if she's a proper explorer, fully fledged explorer.
Oh, very exciting. Okay, so moving on to the brokerage picks of the week. And I'm going to go first. And I have picked Ximena by Alia Yachts. For the following reasons, I've done some homework. She's efficient and fast. The boat features a Van Oostenen's fast displacement hull form. So that reduces drag and allows a top speed of 22 knots and a range of 3,200 nautical miles at 12 knots. But despite her speed, the boat offers really impressive stability and comfort for long distance cruising, something I'm always very keen on. You don't want to notice necessarily how fast you're going. She accommodates 10 guests in 5 cabins, and there's a master suite that's got floor-to-ceiling windows for really beautiful ocean views. She's also got great eco-friendly creds. She uses recyclable materials in the interiors and hybrid propulsion for reduced emissions, and solar panels as well to supplement the boat's energy needs. The boat's designed by Omega Architects. If you don't know their back catalogue, then here are a few of them. Ultra G, 60 metre that was released last year by Heesen with an interior by Harrison Eidsgaard. Reliance, a 55 metre from 2023, which was another collaboration with Heesen. Illusion, 65 metre from 2013, but you'll probably know her as Galactica Star, her former name. She was another Omega Architects project with interiors by Ballenberg Rowell and another Heesen. Omega Architects have done some great stuff, and I think she offers an impressive and well-rounded package for €24,900,000.
That's a very good price, yeah. Very nicely designed boat. And that's Omega Architects, who we heard about also for the story on Project Angelica, the Heesen that was sold earlier this year.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, very impressive portfolio and a very nice looking Alia Yachts. What year? 2025. So quite new.
Yeah, modern. Not picking any old ones. Brand new.
Well, I am picking an old one, Charlotte. And do you know what? I'm really surprised that you didn't pick this one, because this is so up your street. This is like the boat. And also, dear listeners, Charlotte picked first. She got to pick her brokerage pick of the week first. I came second. But I've picked a 31-metre classic sailing yacht called Weatherbird, which was a favourite of Coco Chanel and Louis Armstrong back in the day. So a yacht with lots of character, lots of history. Are you regretting your decision, Charlotte?
I mean, I'm sort of silently crying. I was trying to mix it up a bit by choosing something a bit different and a bit more up to date. But yeah, you're right. This is absolutely up my street. Love a sailing yacht, love a classic boat, love a boat with an amazing history. And you can't really get better than Coco Chanel and Louis Armstrong in terms of previous guests, can you?
No, you can't. And you actually, I'm just looking at the price, and I thought I might have written it down wrong, but I just checked and I haven't. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you will know that I also really like a budget boat. So this yacht is actually on the auction block with Boathouse Auctions, and the bidding opens at just 1 million euros, Charlotte. So I think we should get out there, get our paddles out, and throw our bids into the ring. The bidding will be held virtually from the 20th to 25th of February, and the seller is actually represented by Richard Callender at Northrop and Johnson, so a kind of joint venture there between the auction house and Northrop and Johnson. This boat was commissioned by American expats Sarah and Gerald Murphy, to whom you can find a dedication on the first page of the F. Scott Fitzgerald novel, Tender is the Night.
And can I just say that's one of my favourite books. Same. I feel like this, it's such a good book. I can't believe I didn't pick this. I'm so cross.
And also, funnily enough, you know, Tender is the Night opens in a, set in the south of France, and it opens in a pink hotel, which most people think is a hotel that I can actually almost see through my window, kind of just on the edge of the bay over there. So, you know, I think this is a very fitting pick for me, and I'm glad that I caught it before you, Charlotte, because I if you'd got there first. But yeah, so Fitzgerald was a frequent guest on board this yacht, as well as we said, Ernest Hemingway, Coco Chanel, and Louis Armstrong. And the sailing yacht was actually named after Armstrong, with a copy of his Weatherbird rag record symbolically melded into the keel mid-build. What a tale. But she's actually a very nice boat, regardless of all this heritage. She's kind of lots of glossed wood and that painted white oak, so it feels very fresh, but also kind of traditional and nautical. She had a big old refit in 2022, and the work lasted 17 months and included quite a lot of aesthetic modifications, as well as kind of engineering and structural changes. So I think that's a brilliant pick, actually.
It is. You've bettered me 100%. I've got my hat off.
Good. Good stuff. It's all about winning over here, guys. This podcast is, we're out to win.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to wrap up, as always, with the data. And while we're talking about glamorous boats, we thought, why not focus on some barts over New Year's?
Yeah, let's do that. So we've got some data here, as Charlotte said, put together by Boat Pro. And I wanted to quiz you, Charlotte. Now, Charlotte has already seen this data, but whether she remembers it all is another question. So tell me, Charlotte, how many yachts roughly do you think were in St. Barts on New Year's Eve this year?
I know it was a lot because we were looking at it in the run-up to it and looking at Boat Pro and seeing who was over there. And just anecdotally, I've heard from people it was a really great year. I reckon it must have been maybe not quite 200, a couple of hundred.
Yes, almost exactly right. So it's 192 yachts. As always, we count yachts measuring above 25 metres only. So 192 of those. The total LOA, so if you stacked them all in front of each other, was 10,192 meters. That's pretty sizable. But the average length was slightly smaller at 53.1 meters. What do you think the breakdown of motor versus sail was, if you had to guess?
Oh, there were more sailing yachts than I'd have thought. It's still a small percentage, but I think the number of sailing yachts was around sort of 18, 19, 20. So I guess that leaves, the remainder being motor yachts.
Yep, that's exactly right. So yeah, I thought the same thing. Quite a lot of sailing yachts on the scene, 22 of them. But there might be perhaps skewed because obviously we had Coru there, the yacht that is allegedly owned by Jeff Bezos. She's the largest if you include the bowsprit, but if you don't include it, it was Kismet. So the brand new Lursen was also on the scene, obviously, because it wouldn't be St. Barts without all the newest and coolest yachts on the scene.
I mean, it's hard to think, you know, those two yachts alone, Coru and Kismet, would, you know, draw a huge crowd on the beach. But then there were seven super yachts over 100 metres, right? There was Kismet, Arpo, Renaissance, A Beautiful Boat, Coru, Chaos, Brava Eugenia, and Lady Mora. So quite a sight to see if you're in the area, all those huge boats and new boats as well.
Yeah, it was a real all-star cast. The only one that was really missing was Rising Sun, which is normally always there, but she's in Germany having a refit. So she was noticeably absent and, by the looks of things, missed out on quite a big party. The fleet was pretty young also, actually. So according to our data, there were no less than 57 yachts that were launched after 2020, which makes up about 30% of the fleet in attendance. And there were 16 yachts delivered in 2023 and 13 yachts delivered in 2024. So if you missed the Monaco Yacht Show and you wanted to get a fix of new yachts, it looks like St. Barts was the place to see them all.
Yeah, there were a lot of boats from last year, as well as Kismet. You know, She's a 10-2, Akula, Asani, M. Lots of boats that were at the Monaco Yacht Show, like you say. Night Fury 2, Go, some great boats. So wish I was there, gutted, but I bet that was one hell of a party. And great that so many boats managed to be there.
Yeah, next year, Charlotte, we'll be there.
Next year.
Sailing in on a Weatherbird, when we successfully bid on it.
Yeah, once I've raised my paddle, I'll be there, me and Louis. Well, thank you, Katya. It's been an honour.
Thank you, Charlotte.
Okay, so as always, thanks for listening to this week's episode of Boat Briefing, which is a production of Boat International Media. This week's podcast was edited by Naomi Wilson, and do remember to like and subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. Thanks, and have a good week.